What happened to General Electric? The company that was co-founded by Thomas Edison and J.P. Morgan, that once brought good things to life, that pioneered inventions in everything from light bulbs to jet engines, that was once the most valuable and admired corporation in the world, is now a shadow of its former self, divided up and downsized to the point where it's barely recognizable. The story of GE is a fascinating case study in the possibilities and perils of American capitalism. And it's a story told in gripping detail by William Cohen in his new book, Power Failure: The Rise and Fall of an American Icon. William is a former investment banker turned best-selling financial journalist who's written for The Atlantic, The New York Times, The Financial Times, among others, and has authored several award-winning business books. He's also a founding partner of Puck, the new digital media venture, and he joins us now to share some key insights from his book.
Hi, this is William D. Cohen, the author of Power Failure: The Rise and Fall of an American Icon, which is about the rise and fall of the General Electric Company, once the world's most valuable and most respected company, that is now just months away from breaking itself up into three distinct companies and will no longer exist as the highly regarded conglomerate that it once was. My book is about how that happened, how GE went from being the most respected and most valuable company in the world to being, pretty much nearly irrelevant. This is my seventh book. Most of my books are about Wall Street, including four bestsellers. But I have also been a correspondent for Vanity Fair. I'm a founding partner of Puck, the new digital media company. And I write for a variety of publications, including the New York Times, the Financial Times, Airmail, Town and Country, Rolling Stone, and others. It is my pleasure to be with you to talk about the five key insights that I have gained from my book, Power Failure. The first insight is that the choice of a CEO matters, and it matters a lot. Jack Welch, of course, was the legendary CEO of General Electric, running the company from 1981 to 2001. During that time, GE's market value increased from $12 billion when he took over to more than $600 billion about a year before Jack retired. He chose as his successor Jeff Immelt, who had run GE's medical equipment business after a very highly publicized and lengthy competition between Jeff Immelt and Jim McNerney and Robert Nardelli. Jack told me that he chose Jeff because he thought Jeff would do the best job and was the best qualified to become the CEO of GE after him. But he quickly soured on Jeff, and then during our very first meeting together, he made no bones about his view that he had made a terrible mistake in choosing Jeff. And by the time we had our first of many conversations in the fall of 2018, about a year and a half before Jack died in March of 2020, GE was no longer anything remotely like what it had been when Jack turned it over to Jeff on September 7th, 2001, 4 days before 9/11. Jack had many criticisms of Jeff, that he didn't listen to people, that he didn't understand finance, that he overpaid for acquisitions, that he panicked, that he missed earnings estimates when he should have made them. The irony, of course, is that Jack selected Jeff, and for him to be so disappointed with Jeff's tenure and what had become of GE under Jeff's leadership led me to wonder and ask Jack why he had made this mistake. How could he have made this mistake? Choosing a CEO and a successor is the most important thing Jack could have done. It's his most important job as the CEO of GE was to choose his successor. He didn't really have a good explanation for what had happened other than he sort of became susceptible to Jeff's political skills, his sucking up skills, but he admitted he'd made a terrible mistake and that that would be part of his legacy. The second most important insight I learned is that it's crucial that a CEO understand finance, especially if half of your company's profits come from making money from money. That's very important. Jeff Immelt, while a very smart fellow, graduate of Dartmouth College and the Harvard Business School, didn't really understand finance as well as he thought he did. He had a marketing focus when he was at Harvard Business School. His first job out of business school was working for P&G on the Duncan Hines account, where his office mate was none other than Steve Ballmer, who, of course, went on to become one of the founders of Microsoft. And he had an incredible amount of success at GE, mostly by generating revenue and generating sales, but not really understanding GE Capital, which was GE's big finance business, one of the largest financial institutions in the world, and that was generating, you know, roughly 40% to 50% of GE's earnings in any given year. Truth be told, Jeff did not really understand the risks that were inherent in that business. And when the 2008 financial crisis came along, by then it was roughly too late to do anything about the risks that GE Capital faced. And essentially, while it did not participate in the TARP, which was the program that was used to bail out Wall Street, it did participate in any number of government-sponsored lending and guarantee programs that managed to barely stave off bankruptcy for GE Capital. I discovered in the reporting of this book that GE Capital almost filed for bankruptcy twice, which is a remarkable thing and that nobody knew about. Jeff Immelt ultimately decided to sell off GE Capital and get GE out of the finance business altogether, which was a business that GE got into during the Great Depression in the 1930s when its customers could no longer afford to buy the appliances that GE wanted to sell, so it helped them to buy those appliances by financing them. And that developed into a huge finance operation that was making billions of dollars that Jeff Immelt decided to sell off and really had no other way to replace those earnings. The third insight from the book is that as CEO, you have to be willing to encourage opposing points of view, even if you don't agree with those points of view. Because if you don't encourage opposing points of view, you end up coming off as like the smartest guy in the room and that you don't care about the views of your top executives. And people at that level who feel like they're not being heard will often leave and find new jobs, which is exactly what happened too often in the case of Jeff Immelt's time as the CEO of GE. People like John Kroenke, who was running the power business at GE and running it very well, objected to something Jeff was calling the Global Growth Initiative, which was a way to push down more responsibility to various country managers in the 150 or so countries that GE did business so that they could make decisions on contracts and new business without having to go back and get the approval of people in headquarters in Fairfield, Connecticut, or at the various business units. So if John Kroenke was running the power business, say the country manager in India, for instance, could make those decisions without going back to ask the guy who ran the power business. Well, naturally, the guy who runs the power business didn't like that idea and the idea that his power would somehow be usurped. And so he objected strenuously to this and expressed that view to Jeff, but Jeff had made his decision and didn't want to listen to opposing views. John Krenicki ended up leaving the company and went on to a very successful career in private equity. Another example is Michael Prolley, who ran G Capital's real estate finance business, which consisted of ownership of a lot of real estate around the country and the world, a lot of loans made to finance the acquisition of various real estate properties, and equity positions in various real estate properties. In 2007, as the financial crisis looked like it was unfolding, Michael Prolley told Jeff Immelt that he believed GE, the time was perfect, the time was right for GE to sell its real estate business. What he thought of was at the top of the market. Jeff Immelt disagreed. He waved around a McKinsey study that he had had done that said the real estate market would continue to thrive. Of course, less than a year later, the real estate market completely crashed, and GE Capital lost a tremendous amount of value for its business that it would have had Jeff Immelt been willing to listen to Michael Prolley. The fourth insight was the importance of avoiding deal heat, not getting so wrapped up in the idea of buying a business or selling a business that you lose sight of either how much you're paying for it or how much you're getting in return. Unfortunately, Jack Welch suffered from this to some degree, although it never really hurt him that much. He obviously paid something like $600 million for Kidder Peabody in 1986, which was just a terrible time to buy Kidder Peabody. And that was that investment banking deal turned out to be a terrible one for GE. He ended up getting his money back because he ended up selling Kidder Peabody to Payne Webber, which then got bought by UBS for $10 billion. And GE made about $2 billion on its Payne Webber stock. He got lucky. Jeff Immelt got less lucky. He overpaid terribly for Alstom, the assets of the French power company that GE bought in and around 2014. That business has been basically an albatross around GE's neck to this day. And in the 2008 financial crisis, as GE was struggling mightily to keep afloat, he decided to sell NBC Universal, its very large television and Hollywood studio and theme park business, to Comcast in two tranches of deals for about $30 billion, and without running an auction for the business, which would have been the normal way to do a deal for such a unique and valuable property. And within a few years, Comcast had turned that business into something worth around $100 billion before the pandemic. That's generally, those two deals are generally regarded as among the two worst ever, overpaying for Alstom and selling NBC Universal too cheaply, which of course ended up hurting GE overall. And then when you combine that with selling GE Capital in an announced sale that probably allowed buyers to pick GE's pocket, the combination of all those three things hurt GE tremendously. The fifth insight that I got from writing this book, Power Failure, The Rise and Fall of an American Icon, is to avoid at all cost inviting the fox into the hen house. And unfortunately, that's exactly what Jeff Immelt did in 2015 after the Alstom deal was complete and he had announced the sale of GE Capital in something known inside GE as Project Hubble. He invited a hedge fund to buy a big stake, ended up being a $2.5 billion stake in GE. He invited Trion Capital Partners, a firm run by Nelson Peltz and his son-in-law, Ed Garden, to invest in GE as a way to, I think Jeff thought it would be a way to ratify his strategic brilliance in buying Alstom and announcing the sale of GE Capital. Jeff Immelt thought that Peltz and Garden would be friends. He had known Ed Garden a long time. He was friendly with Ed's brother. They went to Dartmouth together. Jeff used to go to the Garden's home in Melrose, Massachusetts for holidays when Jeff was at Dartmouth and also, I believe, at Harvard Business School. Jeff was from Cincinnati and didn't necessarily go home for those holidays all the time, but he would go to the Garden's house, and I think he thought that Trion, which of course is known to be rapacious when it needs to be, like most hedge funds, would be a quiescent presence, and it turned out to be exactly the opposite, as Jeff was unable to replace the earnings that he lost by selling GE Capital and had mistakenly used the proceeds of the sale of GE Capital, something like $35 to $40 billion worth of those proceeds, to buy GE stock back at the top of the market. So no surprise, while Trion made some money by selling a portion of its ownership stake in GE as the stock fell and then fell further, Trion's began to bare its teeth and ultimately pushed for the departure of Jeff Immelt as CEO after 17 years in June of 2018, perhaps 6 months to a year before Jeff tended to be on his way in any event. That became another huge mistake that Jeff made. Anyway, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the book. It took me some 3 years to write. It's an amazing story and worth your time and effort. Thank you so much.
Thank you, William. That was William D. Cohen with five insights from Power Failure, The Rise and Fall of an American Icon. For a look inside another iconic American company, check out our book bite for Still Broke, Walmart's Remarkable Transformation and the Limits of Socially Conscious Capitalism. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.